I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Show, a part of our It's Your Agribusiness series. In 12 years, this is show number 3,571. Joining us in studio this morning, Mr. Wayne Soren, Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning.
Like your shirt.
Yours too.
Luke Rendell, who works with us, putting all these topics and guests together, even flip-flopping a couple in the last couple of minutes, has joined us. Luke, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
You know, there's a lot to talk about in the show today, and we'd better get at it because we got lots of guests. And the recap of the year in South Dakota agriculture, I think, really is at the top of the list. We're middle of the month. What would you say, Wayne? What would you remember out of this year?
Changes. That kind of sums it up for me anyway. You know, we went into the year not really knowing what our crop prices were going to be, and they kind of skyrocketed on us, and which is good. The weather is always kind of a wild card, but who would have ever guessed that we would have gone from 2 years ago having way too much rain to not having near enough. I think just change is just and of course, it's one of those things that, you either adapt or you get run over. So,
well, what about Luke? You know, he's the young guy here. He's got more of a face hair than you do this morning. I don't know what happened to him. He used to be clean cut Luke, but, what would you say? Agriculture 2021.
Well, I think Wayne really hit it on the head with change. We came out of, we were still in COVID, obviously, so that's changed the whole dynamic of, everything, really. Luckily, we're able to have a convention this year. We weren't able to last year, but, just learning how to social distance, how to be safe, has been completely major in farming.
We're back. We were talking about agriculture, 2021. We can keep going. Ladies and gentlemen, don't worry about that siren. It's safe in your homes. We don't know what it is here, and if Luke and Wayne start running out the door, I think maybe we're going to be okay.
Because we can run faster than you, pal.
Wayne was just talking about change, and right? You need to be on your
toes a
little bit.
Something we'll remember.
Yes.
So 2021, from your side, Luke.
2021, Wayne hit it on the head with change. COVID was a big change for all of us. So I think we learned a lot, how to care for each other and figuring out what our priorities are.
So you mentioned the convention coming up Thursday and Friday, and I told you it was 108. You're not as old as I am,
close.
So I figured that maybe I counted more.
We're not there yet.
I don't think you got anybody else that's as old as I am counting the number of years. So, 106, 108 is more than 100.
106th annual convention.
So, Wayne, were you there when they started year one?
No. No. I don't even believe I was a glimmer in anybody's eye at that point.
Are you glimmering anybody's eye today?
I think maybe my wife. I'm not real sure, but
you
most of the time, I think, yeah, unless she's mad at me.
So what's happened through the years with this convention, particularly in the last 20, 25 years?
I think one of the big changes is we used to have almost a week convention, and it's gotten quite a bit shorter, and I think a lot of that is just because people just don't have the time anymore to be able to be away from the farm and the ranch for a whole week, and so now our convention is a little shorter. That doesn't mean it's not any better. I think this year's convention is probably one of the best that we've had in a little while. I think it's going to be.
And it looks like you'll have some nice weather for it.
Oh, yeah, that too, which can kind of work against you too.
In December,
think? Yeah. So, but, the highlight of the whole convention is probably the vice president's report, which I don't really see on this list of things here. But
you know, we kind of listed them by importance.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying I don't.
And he
don't
never know. Got to that this morning.
I don't understand.
Your buddy
why,
Luke.
Yeah, why the vice president's
vice
report
president Wayne? I'm sorry, I must have left that one.
You know, I just had a note from Doug Somke. He said, "Give Wayne 45 seconds." So what would you say? What would you say in those 45 seconds as to the importance of the South Dakota Farmers Union, importance of us working together, particularly in a time of change?
Well, I think one of the biggest things of our convention that's never changed from even the beginning is that the policy for the organization is done at the convention by the members themselves. So this isn't something that Wayne Sorn comes up with. This is what the members of our organization come up with for agriculture in the state of South Dakota.
So, Luke, from your side, you're the communicator. What you see, what you hear, what do you expect to hear on Thursday and Friday?
There will be great conversation. The convention is so important to our organization just because it allows our members to come together and discuss important ag issues, you know, across the whole entire state. So that's the biggest thing is it's a grassroots organization, and this is where it comes from. It comes from the county level. From there, it comes to our state convention, and important things can develop and make its way all the way to the federal level.
Fact-sharing panel. Do you want to go through the four people or three people or 16 people, whatever the number is that that you have there?
So we have special guests for our convention. We have former Congresswoman Heidi Heidekamp will be there. She's going to give a really good speech, and you know, you'll just have to kind of be there to listen to what we all are going to be covering. But we'll make sure to get a report back to you. We also have Zach Ducheneau, who's the FSA administrator, Rob LaRue, National Farmers Union president. And one thing that we're really excited about, and I think Wayne can probably attest to this too, but we're going to have a producer panel on the product of industrial hemp in South Dakota.
So we're talking about all these things that are going on. What do you think, if you polled the people that will attend, they would say was most important in their minds that they would be talking about between sessions over a sandwich, over a libation of some kind? What would be important to them, Wayne?
Well, I'm not... I think this hemp panel, I think, is going to have a lot of discussion in it. You know, the state made the hoops huge to jump through on this thing, and hopefully we're going to get a few more people that'll try hemp. To have some people that are on the national level that will be able to talk about things that happen in agriculture, and not only that, but you know, we're coming up on a farm bill, unfortunately, again, which is always a big battle, and so you know, to let those people on the federal level know what we here in South Dakota need and want. They also have other areas of the country that need to be part of that farm bill, but a lot of times I think the Northern Plains sometimes gets left out in that discussion.
One of the things I'm hearing, and I haven't talked with you guys, is that I got a call saying Colin Peterson, remember Colin Peterson?
Yep.
And a couple of others are putting together a plan to help those farm groups when they go to Washington. Having been to Washington with you guys, we couldn't even get some of the South Dakota delegation to meet with you. And they're basically promising, and I think Darren Hefty is going to be involved with them as well, that we'll have as good a contacts in the Midwest as they've been doing in the South for a number of years when they go to D.C. That could make a big difference.
That'd make a huge difference. I stress this a lot when we go to D.C., meeting with those representatives that from other states that are supposedly recognizing as their ag person, I think it takes when you show up and you got scars on your hands and calluses on your hands and you know the everyday living of agriculture, I think they take that a little more serious than some guy that shows up in a $300 chute and is paid to say those kind of things. They know that we took time off of our job to go talk to them. And I think that's one of the important things about going out to D.C.
You never know what to expect when you get there.
Oh, heavens no. And you never know who you're going to actually talk to. And so if Colin can get that done for agriculture, I think that's a huge thing, especially with the Farm Bill coming in. I mean, we need to talk to some of these legislators that really have no concept of the reality of what it is out in agriculture.
Orrin is going to be talking with us shortly. We're going to talk with him about the industrial hemp panel, and we'll try to figure out what all this other talk about medical marijuana, cannabis, and all of this is in South Dakota. That's next on our South Dakota Farmers Union Hour. All right, the gentleman from Eagle Butte has the floor, Orrin Lesmeister. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Bill. How are you guys?
Well, except for a little power outage here and there in the middle of the sunshine. You know, it gets a little scary this time of year, but so does industrial hemp and where we're going. Tell us what you're going to be talking about. You got a panel. Would you explain it to these two guys that are in here, Luke and Wayne, this morning, too?
You bet. Sure. And thank you for having me on the show this morning. During the panel, we're going to probably discuss with our hemp coordinator. I'll be there, South Dakota Hemp Coordinator Derek Scheffelbein, and a few others on the panel, from processors to producers to growers to seed salesmen. So what we're going to do is we're going to dig in and see what the first year of crops did in South Dakota. We're going to see what the regulation reviews have done to them, what we need to maybe change or fix or stand back up. Some of the other things we're going to talk about is the future of hemp, where the processing is going to go, how many more growers do we want in the state? What can the processors handle at this time? And how many acres do we really want to see grown in the state of South Dakota?
Other states in hemp, any success stories?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's like any other crop, Bill. We've talked about this in the past couple of years that I've been involved with this. There's risks involved. There is some shortfalls. There's some guys who maybe don't do things right, maybe don't do the research, but the ones that are trying to do everything right, cross the T's and dot the I's and make sure contracts are in place with reputable companies and processors, getting the right seed to grow, you know, really getting down to the end of the weeds, pun intended, about it, they're having success stories. And right here in South Dakota, we have some too.
Orrin, say this, Wayne. Do you see the state of South Dakota making this a little bit easier for these hemp growers? I know other states that it's not near as complicated to get a license to grow hemp.
Correct. You know, the licensing process is a little burdensome. That's not really my focus yet at this time. I think myself and the South Dakota Hemp Association board, we're working more in the working parts of the program where it hinders some producers and processors of what they could be doing a lot simpler than, you know, we're trying to deregulate that first and foremost above anything. So that way people who are wanting to grow it have the ability to grow it. And yeah, and we're looking at the licensing process also, but the big cumbersome is right within the program itself at this time.
Orrin, this is Luke. On the panel, we do have a producer who's going to kind of give his testimony of his year. He grew quite a few acres of hemp. Could you kind of hit on that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, we have, you know, I wish we had two growers on the panel. One couldn't be with us, but both of them had very good years. You know, even with the year that South Dakota had overall with the drought, they were lucky enough, like others, catch some timely rains. With that, I know they're averaging about 1,000 to up to 1,500 pounds per acre in some cases, roughly, you know, 50 cents on a pound return. Now, this stuff was grown for seed, for, you know, you could call it grain, but for seed, it'll go back into production and be sold as a seed next year, this coming spring. And then with the fiber, I know one producer baled his fiber, And at this time, he's looking to take it to Kansas to have it processed. So there's some return on investment there also.
Say, Oren, can you kind of expand a little bit on there's a lot of confusion on what exactly hemp is. Is it seed? Is it CBD? Is it fiber? Can you expand a little bit on that?
You bet. So, yeah, industrial hemp, there's different varieties of it. You know, the big one 5, 6, 7 years ago was all CBD. That's all you heard about was CBD. CBD this, CBD that.
All right, what's CBD stand for? I'll ask the question.
You broke up there, Bill. What was that?
I probably did because I wanted to know what CBD stood for. And there'd be people out there that say, what is this Lesmeister guy talking about?
Boy, guys, I don't know if you can hear me, but I'm really having a hard time hearing you.
He wants to know what CBD stands for.
I think we've lost the connection. All right, we are having some difficulty. So what does CBD stand for?
Well, Bill, let me answer that question for you.
Well, either one of you, just one of you.
Cannabis oil.
That's what I thought it was.
So I am not an expert in it, but, you know, there's various health benefits from it, pain relief, digestion.
And it can be oil, it can be lotion. I mean, there's a variety of ways that the CBD oils can be, I don't know if you want to say processed, but at least that's the way you can get a hold of them. And that's been legal, I think, if you want to call it that, for a long, long time. But then you've got the fiber part, which is basically the stock of the hemp, okay? What I tried to grow last year was the seed, which is what Oren was talking about, and that's what's at the top of the plant itself. And that's what you put into the ground to grow for the next year. It's like corn or soybeans. That's what you put in the ground. And so you have that, but that seed can be used to make the CBD oil. They extract the oil out of that seed. So there's many segments to this plant. That's why I believe this crop is so versatile, because you can use it in so many different ways. In fact, I was reading a deal on the internet, which everybody can believe, that there's over 5,000 uses for different pieces and parts of the hemp plant.
Oren, what time is your panel?
I do believe it is at 1 o'clock, I do believe, on Thursday.
All right. Sorry we lost you.
Yeah, I apologize. Boy, you guys sound like you was in a garbled something. I don't know
and we're downtown Sioux Falls, where they got lots of connections. you're out in the – it's usually the other way around. We sometimes have trouble out in the rural areas. But, Oren, we appreciate you being with us. We look forward to hearing more about the panel, and we hope people will attend.
Yeah, you know, and Wayne hit it right on the head there at the end. I do believe it was Wayne there that I was listening to. Yes, actually, a few years ago, there were 17,000 uses, value-added ag uses that the USDA put out with industrial hemp. And, yeah, it's unbelievable what it's, you know, what you could do with it. You look at what Europe and even Canada now, other parts of the world that have been growing it for a while are doing with it. We're just starting to get started. So it's pretty exciting.
Oren, we appreciate you. Good luck. And I know that people are going to get a lot of information that maybe they didn't have before. We appreciate you.
You bet. I hope everybody that can shows up for the convention. I think it's going to be great to see everybody in person again, to see the smiles and shake hands. And, yeah, it's going to be great.
Mitch Richter going to be talking to us out of D.C. We're going to talk with Mike Strantz as well. Of course, power permitting. I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome back to our South Dakota Farmers Union show. In the studios this morning, Wayne Soren, longtime vice president, South Dakota Farmers Union, and this media marketing manager, Luke Rindell. Luke, good morning to you.
Morning.
All right. Mitch Richter, are you with us this morning?
I am, Bill. Good morning.
There's a big discussion. Where are you today?
I'm in Washington, D.C. today.
That's what I told everybody, and they said, no, he's in Pierre. And I said, I talked to him yesterday, and he told me he was in D.C. What are you doing there?
Well, just working on some policy stuff. Nothing terribly exciting or earth-shattering. It's just more policy.
All right, policy. What should that mean to the rest of those that are members of the South Dakota Farmers Union? What kind of policies?
Well, we're going to discuss policy at our convention later this week, and that's important because it sets the tone for what we're going to do moving forward. Especially gives me direction with the legislature. We can talk about whether it's water, whether it's chemical, whether it's taxes. We cover it in our policy, and it gives me direction on how I can interact with legislators and tell them what the South Dakota Farmers Union policy is on certain subjects. And it's never very specific, but there's lots of room there for policymakers, legislators to enact new legislation. And we can perhaps help sway it one way or the other to meet the policy that we're going to set later this week.
It was just a week ago, you and I were talking about what you wanted to hear out of the governor's budget address, and you mentioned that you'd like to see raises for teachers and for nurses, saying that we rank 50th in the country. Governor did come back. Does what she's saying make sense to you?
It does. I mean, the state's got a lot of money. She's going to put 6% increases in those three areas, education, providers, and state employees, and I think that's all good. What you have to remember is that a 6% raise in education is not a 6% salary increase like it would be for a state employee. If a state employee is making $50,000 and they get a 6% raise, they're going to see $3,000. An education, we get 6%. That's on the base formula, and that formula, of course, has to pay for not only teachers, but bus drivers, food service workers, custodians, parapros. I mean, everybody that's in part of education. So a 6% is not going to be a 6% teacher increase, but it is very helpful. We are not turning it down at all. We think the governor has done a great service for education, and we hope that she will do the same next year because that's what it's going to take to get us off of 50th.
One of the things that I always like to advocate is farm organizations working together. And you guys and Pierre have done that, at least in the past, unless something has changed and somebody threw a paper airplane that hit somebody. But, you know, what I'm concerned about is that we keep working together with farm organizations for those that are in agriculture, regardless of what side of the fence they might be.
It's vitally important because it just gives policymakers a reason to vote no when you come in and half the ag groups are split one way or the other. We meet every week during session, and there's probably 20 different groups in the room. You say, how do you get 20 ag groups in South Dakota? But there's a number, not only just the farm organizations, then you got the different checkoff groups. You've got people that are interested from the Game Fish and Parks perspective. You've got land use people. You've got development people. You know, rural and urban have to get along in South Dakota, and that's a place where we can start. We'll have a lot of discussion around water this year, and water is important to the rural guy just as much as it is to the cities and towns. So that's going to be a lot of discussion this year because the governor's putting in, you know, $1.5 billion between the state, federal, and local money. And that's going to be really important this year that we get that water money spent in the right areas.
Mitch, this is Wayne. Say the other deal with ag groups working together, I think, is that there are so few farmers and ranchers as legislators. So other legislators have really no resource to go to that they could trust, if you can trust a legislator. I think that's part of the reasoning behind all these ag groups getting together, is because a lot of these people, even though we're an ag state, really don't understand ag.
Yeah, I think this year, you know, of the 105 legislators, I think there's only 14 that are really considered tied to agriculture. And that may be, you know, that might be an ag banker as far as that goes. Is they probably grew up in agriculture, but it might be considered an ag banker. So it is really important because you have more and more people that move to South Dakota that aren't tied to the land. And we need to remind folks where their food comes from. It doesn't just come out of a box. It originates someplace else. And we do that a lot with the ag groups because as the decades have gone by, you see less and less people in agriculture. You know, farms and ranches get bigger and bigger, and so you just have less people involved. But agriculture is still our number one business in South Dakota, and we need to constantly remind people of that.
You know, and to take that full circle, Mitch, that just hits home the point as to why our convention is so important, where producers can get together to discuss policy and take it to the state level.
We do that during the convention. It's also good just to get together finally with COVID. You know, we didn't meet last year. We're going to meet this year. And it helps to look a person in the eye and hear what they have to say, get their viewpoint, and mold that around the policy that we're going to create or enhance this week. That we'll give the legislators a policy book the first week of session that says this is the South Dakota Farmers Union policy, and we hope you'll take that into account as you work through the next 45 legislative days.
All right, you talked about 20 or so organizations meeting, correct?
Correct.
All right. Do you have to slap yourself to say we have a budget surplus? It's a one time. What are we going to do?
Well, every year at the end of the year, we seem to have a surplus. We need to figure out how to handle the excess revenue that comes in South Dakota. That is our biggest issue right now, is we have more revenue than we planned on, and we continue to do conservative estimates, which I think is fantastic. But we need to figure out a way to spend some of that money or give it back to the taxpayers, one or the other, that is beneficial for everyone. And so when we do have excess revenue, it creates a lot of discussion.
Mitch Richter, South Dakota Farmers Union lobbyist, not in Pierre. He's in Washington, D.C. No power problems there. Everything's good. Mitch, appreciate all you do, and we'll be talking to you again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
All right, who's this next guest we're going to have in the next segment?
Mike Strands from the NFU.
All right, Mike Strands is with us. Did you get out of your meeting?
I did. You know, this is a good meeting to be part of, and I always look forward to talk with you, Bill.
National Farmers Union Government Relations. And again, that's the topic that Luke and... this other guy over here, the vice president, wanted us to talk about. So what's important on this, Wayne?
Well, we got the concentration of the packers, and it's been an issue for, I don't know how long, Mike, quite a long time. And I think we might be able to be making some inroads here. And it's good to talk to you, Mike. It seems like I haven't talked to you forever.
Yeah, and then we're talking all the time now. Wait, yeah,
I know. So,
well, I like that point you made about how it's, you know, how long have we been talking about packer concentration? A really long time. You know, we earlier this year celebrated, I don't know if that's quite the right word, but recognized the 100-year birthday of the Packers and Stockyards Act, which, you know, Farmers Union back then knew how big of a problem it was that there was so little, so few options in packing. Everything was all controlled by a few. And for a while there, we had a more diversified and more onerous when it came to the meat packing industry. But over time, that eroded. So that issue is not new. What is new right now is how much attention is being paid to it, both in, you know, the production side of things for farmers and ranchers, but also consumers. And the federal government has shown a greater interest than they have in quite some time. So we've got some possibilities before us when it comes to regulating and putting more competition back into packing.
And I think the COVID, is as bad as it's been, has really revealed a lot of things. One, the supply chain kinks that could happen and did happen. And also, I think a lot of the consumers now have got the taste for homegrown local meats, and hopefully that'll translate into something into the future also.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Wayne. Like the thing that South Dakota Farmers Union, National Farmers Union, we've all known this has been a problem, that there's highly consolidated and monopolistic owners in the meatpacking industry. But what would be really tragic with the whole experience of COVID and the pandemic is that we don't learn from what's happened here and we don't take away some of these lessons. We've got to act on this. Consumers saw what happens when there's a real threat to our food security, and politicians need to listen and take heed. So now's our chance.
Mike, one of the most recent things in the cattle industry that's kind of passed or making its way through Congress is the contract library. How's that a benefit to producers? What can you kind of shed some light on there for us?
Yeah. Thanks for that, Luke. So the cattle contract library, which Congressman Johnson of South Dakota has been leading in the House, passed the House of Representatives the last few days with flying colors. The contract library puts out and makes public a list of all the different sorts of marketing arrangements, maybe not the absolute specific details, but at least it gives all the producers, all the ranchers out there, an idea of what the universe of contract agreements can be. And, that helps you know your options better before you go into a deal with a like that. So similar efforts or similar contract libraries or catalogs are available in pork and in other industries, too, for that matter. Cattle doesn't have quite the same setup. So this is a no-brainer, and it's a pretty easy lift because everybody knows it's so important. That said, just because it's easy doesn't mean we should just let it skate by. We've got to make sure it gets through. But there's also plenty of other reforms we need as well. So it's a step in the right direction, but it's hardly all that we need.
Mike, so many moving parts in D.C. Most recently, there's been some news on biofuels. It's really gaining a lot of attention, and not in necessarily a good way. electric vehicles seem to be kind of the hot topic here within the last few months or year, I should say. But what's the impact to farmers in what's going on with biofuels?
Yeah, there are a lot of moving pieces right now on biofuels. And, we keep kind of fighting through some battles on the RFS, making sure that's protected and like it's going to be set up for success in the long term. That hasn't been an easy discussion. But and we also hear a lot about, like you said, electric vehicles. But I think there's plenty of room for kind of a and approach where it's electric vehicles and expanded biofuel markets. One of the ways we see that and option, I guess, is with some of the language that, well, I guess not even language at this point, but some of the funding availabilities that USDA has put out using some of the American Rescue Plan and infrastructure funds to help out biofuel infrastructure. And then similarly, there's even more of that available if the Build Back Better plan, which the House and Senate are stewing on right now, comes to pass. There's about $1 billion in there directed specifically for biofuel infrastructure. So that would help us build out and make sure there's a good market there for our higher blend like that. So we're hopeful there. So it's kind of two steps forward, two steps back, or I'm not sure. There's just a lot going on in biofuels right now that we're trying to stay on top of.
Mike, we appreciate you weighing in this morning. Appreciate you taking time out of a busy schedule. But we need you here, too. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you were heard pretty well this morning, even if Wayne and Luke are kind of like, who is this guy? So, I know who you are.
Right.
Thanks, Mike.
Glad to do it. Thanks.
All right. All right, Luke, you and I talked yesterday a little bit about something I remember from the two or three conventions I've visited, and that's the torchbearer. Pretty important thing, and you have a guest that you've pulled up for us this morning.
Yeah, we have Rachel from our state office joining us. She's our education director in charge of really, you know, our youth camps and our youth programs. So good morning, Rachel. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So part of the, I guess, really starting out the convention, we celebrate our youth. Can you kind of talk us through that?
Sure. We kind of kick off our convention, I guess, with our education and torchbearer ceremony. And this year is Celebrate the Connections, which was a perfect way of coming back from a year of no camp to highlight the connection that camp brings us all. And we will start by celebrating both some long-term educators. We have hundreds of years of service that we will be recognizing. I think our longest one is, we have a couple 35-year plus people that we will be recognizing, as well as our six seniors or that will be graduating the program as torchbearers.
You know, the one thing that I was impressed with was not only that ceremony, but the number of people there that had grown up as part of the youth organization, and then through the generations, their kids, their grandkids, all were a part of that. Rachel, that's a nice family tree.
Yeah, it is very nice. Even it's amazing how many people, when you wear your camp T-shirt, even say, oh, do they still have camp? I went to camp when I was younger. And so we're in our 85th year, I believe. Well, it's a few more than that, but of having the camping tradition. And it is very well known. And it's nice to see it still going with everything that changes and all of the, as people move away from farming and things, it's still very relevant, and we're still very welcome in all the 40 communities that we do visit.
The number of people that talk about when they had that kind of a ceremony when they were much younger, and the fact that it does help us to pass the torch to that generation, and that's obviously where that torch side comes from that we always talk about in business and agriculture. It's pretty important, and it can be meaningful for an awful lot of generations. You need to make it top of the list every year.
Yep, and actually we one of our poems that's steeped in tradition with Farmers Union is Hold High the Torch. And it talks to that. It's about the torch was there, and when you're unable to carry it, you pass it on so the torch never burns out. And that's exactly the hope, is that you just keep passing the torch until somebody, till there's always somebody there to take it over for you.
Kind of like the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, where nobody ever leaves that ground. I mean, that's kind of what you guys are doing in a little different way, but a very important way. Rachel, we appreciate you. Get that cough behind you, because you got a couple of days of conventions coming up Thursday and Friday.
We do. We're excited, and we're hoping to see you there.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Yep.
All right. Should we talk to our state climatologist? Maybe get a little weather?
Sure. She's going to guarantee a great winter and a nice fall, or a nice spring, right?
You know, I know her well enough to know she knows how to hedge her bet. Climatologist Laura Edwards joins us this morning. Can you do both that Wayne wants?
You know, everyone has a different definition of perfect, so I'll say yes. I can make that happen. Some people want it wet. Some people want it dry. Some people like cold. Some people like warm. So I think we will see a little bit of all of that in the coming winter. So I'll say yes.
All right. Before we get to the important thing, a white Christmas or anything else that may go with it, you know, we had quite the occurrence weather-wise over the weekend, a tornado that went 257 miles in a line, right? And we're talking December now.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite an event. did it strike you?
Yeah, really, really unusual. I think they actually issued a tornado emergency during that event. And, yeah, I really feel for the residents of Kentucky and the neighboring states. That was a really large, really significant event. And they can get tornadoes in December, but that's really unusual, really, for any time of year. And I know the Mesonet down there, their weather station network, reported at least 120 miles an hour wind at one of their stations before it broke due to the tornado. So really was very memorable, I think, for a lot of us.
December. You don't expect it in December. And a lot of people are saying, well, we're going to have an unusual spring and summer when that pathway, the lines that we're now seeing across the country going from southwest to northeast, hit us when we get to April and May. What are you thinking?
Yeah, severe weather-wise, it's a really tough one to call out this far in advance. But really in the near term tomorrow, we could see severe thunderstorm warning issued potentially in the Sioux Falls area, which would be the first time in December for the Sioux Falls area since records began in 1986. So we are certainly seeing some really unusual weather with possible severe tomorrow.
So I know these guys want to know how unusual 2021 is, and I'm always asking the dumb question. What year would you compare this to, Laura?
Oh, I don't. That's a real tough one here. It's been really up and down, with dry and then very wet towards the latter part of the season. You know, visiting with folks at the soybean meeting last week, same kind of thing. It was kind of all over the board this year. I don't know that I have a good analogy, a good comparison year. It's been really wild, actually.
So, Laura, is this what we can expect in the future? I mean, it sure seems like climate change affects us by wild swings. I mean, 2019, we couldn't get it to stop raining. And by 2021, we couldn't get it to start again. So is this going to become the new norm?
Yeah, I think this is something that we should keep in mind as we prepare and plan for our farms in the future, certainly. Big swings from year to year, as you say, or even season to season within the same year. And preparing and planning for managing these extremes, you know, and making sure our soils are in good shape for that, that we have the best management practices that we can do out there to retain moisture and nutrients when we need it. Because I think, yeah, you're right. This is something that we're going to see, I think, continuing into the future.
That's the reason we talked to the climatologist. She understands the history. She understands the kids. Did you get to make your hockey trip?
Yeah, we did. Well, we went north where there's no snow to North
which
Dakota.
Was strange last weekend.
Yeah, we went north, so we had a great time.
That's a great thing to say. Okay, Laura Edwards, appreciate you. You do such a great job for all of us. We look up to what you bring to us.
All right, thank you.
All right, last word in the last 30 seconds. Wayne?
Well, I think we had a good show here. We discussed a lot of things, even though sometimes we had to be interrupted and get going. But come to the state convention if you can.
Luke?
State convention this Thursday and Friday, the 16th and 17th. A lot of good information. We're going to make some really good policy and have good conversation.
All right. We appreciate everybody being with us. I'm Bill Zortman, and the believers in agriculture are really important to us. This has been the monthly South Dakota Farmers Union Show. For the thousands of Farmers Union members, our time's up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.